A mass of kinetic and potential energy, like a symphony orchestra tuning up for a big performance. Hunger might launch the flock, or maybe the sunrise, or perhaps an eagle overhead. The geese are 5,000 arrows drawn on 5,000 trembling bows.
Broadcasting from a patchouli oil-scented inner room stocked with chilled, tannin-free white wine, Salade Niçoise. And room temperature tofu pate on the top floor of a carbon neutral ivory tower above San Francisco Bay.
Fabulous!
Adjacent to a raging bonfire of Bibles, bras, and the Declaration of Independence, right down the street from the nation's first regional gun confiscation headquarters.
From my cold, dead hands.
And, in accordance with a soon-to-be declassified presidential directive requiring each citizen to listen to at least 1 hour of Fairness Doctrine-approved anti-American radio.
Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Berg.
Okay, you are listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, and surprise, I am not Jeff Berg. Jeff Berg has been kind enough to flatter me with a request to sit in for him today. I'm very excited. I'm Mike Koenig. I normally do a show called Think Wing Radio at 9 to 10 p.m. Mondays, and I'd be happy to have you drop in there sometime. I have a website, thinkwingradio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. Shameless self-promotion. What can I say? Okay, we have a guest today, T. Greg Doucette. He was running for the 22nd state senatorial district in North Carolina. He's out of Durham. So we should have a really interesting conversation about him and North Carolina politics. He's a really, really interesting guy, very, very justice oriented. And I mean that in the absolute best possible way. The phone number to call in after we get a little stuff established, you can ask questions or make comments to me or Greg. The phone number is 713-526-5738. And do we have Greg on yet? Is he live?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Hey, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I am fine, thank you. Okay, so Greg, prior state senatorial candidate, has law offices, specializes in criminal defense and business and constitutional and foreclosure law. I actually have a percentage. I'm not sure where I pulled that off of, that you do 45% business, 45% criminal, 7% constitutional, and 3% foreclosure, so I guess you don't need the twirly mustache.
It sounds about right, yeah.
Okay, all right. So I want to start off by saying that I've read a lot of what you have written on Twitter, and the thing that really impressed me initially, you have that very long Twitter thread about criminal defense, and that's what really got me interested in you. And then having exchanged some direct messages and the conversation we had, I just get more impressed all the time. I will say that you practice out of Durham, North Carolina, and if anybody needs legal advice in that area, you can give them a phone number if they ask for one. And his website is durhamweedlawyer.com. We may speak a minute about that. So that's Durham, D-U-R-H-A-M, weed, as in grass, lawyer.com. And I do have a web post on thinkwingradio.com that has links and information and all that kind of stuff. So I guess the first thing is, we've talked a little about the fact that for most of your life, you have been a Republican.
Yes, that's true.
Grew up a Republican. And ran as a Republican. And what did you say the most common question you got when you were at meetings?
Usually asking why I was a Republican.
Yeah, and that kind of is what I think, because you seem way too empathetic to be a Republican.
Well, I was poor at one point in my life, so that kind of helps provide some empathy when you experience things. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Been there. So,
that's what happened. I grew up in a military family in a military and business town, Virginia Beach, Virginia. And I was the oldest of three kids, which I think the oldest child tends to be more liberty-oriented as it is.
How so?
And that was kind of my political philosophy for most of my life.
Why would you say the oldest child tends to be more liberty or libertarian-oriented?
It's completely a guess, but I usually joke with folks that the oldest child is the one the parents screw up on before they learn how to actually parent.
Yeah, that's true.
So you tend to be more independent.
Huh. You see, now I have heard that the oldest child is the one where the parents are trying to be really, really parental, and they tend to be more controlling. And by the second child, they've kind of used that up. So what I have heard is the second child very often is the one that gets away with murder, and the first child is eternally jealous because, you wouldn't let me do that. Well, you know, that was...
That's not far off from the truth.
Yeah.
It happened in my family, too.
Did it? So it wasn't so much that you were given liberty as you took it.
In a nutshell, I hated the overbearing government that was my family.
You were a libertarian firstborn. Okay, so I just want to mention again, we will be taking phone calls, and we do have open lines. The phone number is 713-526-5738, occasionally known as 713-526-KPFT, but since I hate alphanumerics, I go straight for the numerics, 713-526-5738. So what got you interested in running for political office against an incumbent Democrat as a Republican, in what you've told me is sort of a Democratic district?
Yeah, I live in a very Democrat district, a very Democrat city. I enjoy where I'm at, so I'm content being the odd man out, so it was. But I ran because I was very frustrated with politicians in both of our parties here in North Carolina. We've had a lot of questionable legislation. You know, we elected a Republican legislature that has increased spending by over $1 billion, increased taxes all over the place. My Democrat opponent, who I ran against, had a lot of questionable votes of his own. You know, we had a bill recently passed where police body cam, dash cam, any kind of police video used to be a public record.
Right.
It is now not, and my opponent supported that.
Is that even constitutional? Can they constitutionally do that? Is that something subject to challenge, do you think?
Probably not subject to challenge, because states have absolute authority over their own records and what to make public or not. The only constitutional piece is that if the video itself is what's called Brady material, which is a United States Supreme Court case, Brady versus Maryland, where it shows that the person charged with a crime actually did not do it. In that case, they're obligated to provide that information to the defense. But in terms of providing it to the public at large, there's no constitutional obligation for the state to do that.
Is it FOIA sensitive?
No.
So even Freedom of Information Act, it's not subject to that?
Correct. FOIA only applies to federal requests. Most states have their own FOIA laws that are dubbed typically the Public Records Act. That's what we have in North Carolina, but police video was specifically exempted out of it.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So, you did not win in November.
No.
Which I have to say is unfortunate. I don't know if I mentioned it at the beginning, but even though it was a modest contribution, you are probably the first Republican I have sent money to.
I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, I like you, Greg. I know we don't agree on everything, but I think that everything we disagree on has space for negotiation and compromise, and I think that that's what it should be about.
I agree, and I think that's part of why I ran. You know, we've got politicians where they don't want to work together to solve problems. You know, I don't know how many of your listeners have paid attention to the drama we had here this week with
the special session
relating to House Bill 2.
But, well, and that, in a way, is only the short part of it. I mean, there's the whole raping the governor's authority part.
Well, that part's normal for North Carolina. We could talk about that, too. We've got a long history of kicking opponents in the teeth with a smile.
Southern hospitality. Okay, so I guess since you mentioned HB 2 as being the most politically hot issue there, so let's talk about that. Tell us just as a reprise, a little bit about what the law says and how and why it failed to be repealed.
So back in roughly January, February, the city of Charlotte passed an ordinance that said that folks who are transgender can basically use the bathroom of their choice. So
the bathroom of their identity.
Correct. So the way that works in practice is if you look like a guy, you go in the guy's bathroom. If you look like a girl, you go in the girl's bathroom. It's not really something that should be terribly controversial.
And there are laws about, you know, doing things improperly relating to bathrooms. There are existing laws about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got laws against peeping, against assault. All that stuff is already on the book.
Right.
Well, the Republican-led General Assembly called a, quote, emergency session back in March. It lasted one day. And in a span of 12 hours, they had a bill put in place that blocked that particular ordinance and had a bunch of other stuff on it as well. For example, cities could not have non-discrimination ordinances that went beyond what the state provided. So, for example, the city of Chapel Hill had an ordinance that banned discrimination based on veteran status. That got removed. Part of the bill prevented cities from having minimum wages that were higher than the state minimum wage. And one piece actually put in that if you have a employment discrimination claim pending in state court, that actually got dismissed. You were not allowed to bring employment claims in state court anymore, even though folks' taxpayer dollars are paying for access to the state courts. So this all happened in March, happened in 12 hours, no real public input, no public debate, and it triggered a massive nationwide firestorm for months. I mean, we've lost games with the NCAA, we've lost concerts, we've lost all sorts of trips. Several cities around the country have banned government travel to North Carolina. It's not just a civil rights issue. It's become a very serious economic issue for the state.
But fortunately, you've regulated bathrooms.
Right. We now have potty police. So we could frame it as a jobs bill if we want.
What did they claim that the special session was for? Did they claim that it was about this bathroom situation, or did they make some fallacious claim to justify the special session and then just do all this other stuff? Now, we're talking back in March now.
Right. They specifically said that it was to address this bathroom ordinance. They didn't make any reference to all of this other stuff that got added to it.
Yeah, funny how that works. One of the things that fascinates me is you have so many self-proclaimed small government Republicans and small government libertarians. And here you have a classic small government case where literally there is a corporate entity, not a corporate, a political entity that wants to do a certain thing in a certain way in its area of responsibility. And for this, big government feels, well, local control is great, except sort of when it disagrees with us. And right. I can never understand that mindset. Don't they understand that that's internally inconsistent?
Well, I think they understand. I just don't think they care. You know, if you look at the history of North Carolina just in the past 4 years, it hasn't just been that. You know, there was just a state Supreme Court case this past week where the state tried to take over the water system for the city of Asheville.
Because that worked out so well in Flint.
Right, right. So the state Supreme Court ruled that that was improper. You know, our town of Wilson wanted to create a municipal Wi-Fi service because there's no real internet access out there. The General Assembly blocked that. So there's all kinds of things going on. Even down to the city of Greensboro had its own city council districts redrawn by the state that also eventually got overturned. So this habit of reaching into towns and cities and doing things that historically have been what the municipal government does, our state legislature has been doing that for a while.
Okay, I'm going to get ready for a break here. You're listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I am Mike Honig, sitting in for Jeff Berg. I normally do a show called Think Wing Radio Mondays at 9 p.m. here on KPFT. I have thinkwingradio.com is my website, and you can go there and find links to a lot of the stuff we talk about and listen to archived shows. And you can contribute and support KPFT by going to kpft.org and clicking on the tip jar and picking the show of your choice, which today can be Partisan Gridlock, but normally I would request is Think Wing Radio. Okay, so Shannon, I guess we're ready for weather and traffic.
Right you are, Mike. Right you are. It's good to be here with you.
And thank you.
Good afternoon. It is currently 76 degrees in overcast skies. 30% chance of rain showers before 7 p.m. tonight and patchy fog thereafter. Otherwise, mainly cloudy skies with a low around of 67 degrees Friday night. Cloudy Saturday with a high of 77 and about 20% chance of showers and patchy fog before 10 a.m. tomorrow. And let's take a brief look at our roadways. There's an accident on the North Freeway HOV lane outbound right at North Shepherd. That's blocking that right there. And a few slow-going areas, around town, including on the Katy Freeway inbound from Highway 6 over to Beltway 8, on the North Freeway outbound from downtown to around Little York, and on the West Loop southbound from the Katy Freeway to 59. But besides that, it's pretty clear out there, except on the Gulf Freeway outbound from Edgebrook out to around Baybrook Mall. You're tapping on those brakes, probably those last-minute shoppers. That's a look at your Houston area weather and traffic. I'm Shannon McKerchie, and you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1. Back to you, Mike.
And I am Mike Honig, sitting in for Jeff Berg here at Partisan Gridlock, 90.1 FM in Houston, and my guest is T. Greg Doucette. And I did get that pronunciation right, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Just, I figured it was, just I've never actually checked. And Greg is a former candidate for North Carolina 22 State Senatorial District. And I think we need more Republicans like him, frankly. I mean, you know, you don't have to agree on everything as long as you're reasonable. And I know you're a reasonable guy and a justice-oriented guy. And I am a firm believer that no one ideology has all the right answers. And I think that often the best answer is a mixture of both sides that addresses concerns of both sides. And we just don't get enough of that.
I agree. We're on the same page on that one.
Yes, I really do believe we are. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so excited that I could get you on the air. So tell us now about this Roy Cooper thing.
So for this one, you got to kind of take the long view with North Carolina history.
Yeah.
Right? We have a very strong legislative branch going back to when we were a colony. Our governors back in the day weren't even elected. The legislature picked a governor for successive one-year terms.
Hmm.
So as time has gone on, whether the governor's been Republican, Democrat, or something else, the legislature has always had all the power. That changed recently, where for the first time in a long time, you had a Republican governor and a Republican legislature. So we've only had three Republican governors in our history. One was in the 70s, one was in the 80s, and then recently with Pat McCrory. We've only had a Republican legislature twice in our history. There was a brief time where there was a 60-60 split in the state house back about 10, 15 years ago. And then since 2010, the Republicans have had control. So when Governor McCrory got elected, the Republican-run legislature expanded a lot of his authority, enabled him to appoint more people without having to run it by anybody, and basically just made the governor more powerful. Well, McCrory lost re-election. A lot of folks think it's because of House Bill 2. So they called a emergency session again, probably about 2 weeks ago now, and took all of that power.
Now, wait a second. I want to just talk for an instant. The cover for the special session was what?
Hurricane relief.
There you go. This was a hurricane relief special session. And what did they end up doing for hurricane relief?
Unknown to everybody, they were actually gathering legislators' signatures for a petition to convene a special session. So we came in on Monday for hurricane relief, and then we found out on Tuesday they were calling a special session for Thursday. So you actually had two different special sessions in the span of 1 week. And then the Thursday special session had a whole bunch of bills curtailing the governor's power.
Well, you know, as long as they were in town.
Right, right. We actually, historical fact, we have had more sessions of our legislature during this two-year term than at any time since the Civil War.
Roy Cooper is currently the sitting state attorney general.
Yes.
And he won the election by something just over 10,000 votes?
That's correct. Yes, it was very close.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'll be candid. This is something that I say snidely, but which I half believe, that when Republicans win elections, it's probably in many cases because of voter suppression and gerrymandering, and when they lose elections, it's because they didn't do enough suppression and gerrymandering. Is that too snide, or is there some truth to that?
Yeah, I think for this election cycle, that's too snide. And the reason why is that if you look at all of the races, there really was a Trump-driven wave in North Carolina. Democrats only won a couple elections. They won the governorship. They won the attorney generalship. Both of those races had a lot of House Bill 2 going on. But in our among our executive branch council of state, the only other Democrats to win were our Secretary of State, who's been in office for 30-something years, and our auditor, who won by less than 10,000 votes statewide.
But you have a photo ID law, do you not?
We passed it, but it was overturned in July by the federal courts.
So what is required in North Carolina in order to be eligible to vote? What do you have to do or what do you have to have?
So to register to vote, you've got to provide documentation of your residency to figure out where they're going to assign you.
And what is
once you
what
once
is
you
that documentation?
Have an actual registration card, you just give them your name and address.
I'm sorry, what is that documentation that's required consist of?
There's a pretty long list of what you can provide. It can either be a copy of an ID, copy of a passport, a utility bill, just anything that proves you actually live where you say you live. And you have to sign an affidavit attesting under penalty of perjury that you actually live there.
Okay. So not too strict is what you would say.
No. The General Assembly passed a very expansive bill that made a lot of changes. But the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that they had targeted minority voters with the exact quote was, with almost surgical precision, and then completely overturned that law in its entirety back over the summer.
So, I'm sorry, that then leaves would-be voters where?
Exactly where they started before the law was passed.
Which is a relatively lenient way of providing documentation for registration.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so now Roy Cooper, governor-elect, current state attorney general, from my reading, he has said that he is going to try to fight that in court. Does he have any grounds?
Yeah. He'll file it. The only question becomes the timing of the session. So there's no real constitutional basis to say the legislature can't take power back from a governor they gave the power to. I mean, it's just, given North Carolina's history, I don't see any legal basis for that. But the question becomes, was the session properly called? Because legislators have signed this petition to call a session on Tuesday. They didn't actually call the session until Thursday. There's some argument that that itself is improper. I'm skeptical that any court is going to use that as a basis to invalidate the laws that were passed. I could be wrong, but that just seems like a very drastic thing to come from a court.
Do you think that it will be appealed or contested in state court or federal court or state and then federal?
It'll be state for all of it because it relates to how the state government itself is structured.
So the only way it would go federal is if they felt it violated some federal law or was otherwise unconstitutional.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. I do want to point out we are taking calls if you feel like chatting. The phone number is 713-526-5738. We have open lines. My guest is T. Greg Doucette, who goes simply by Greg. You don't have to call him TG or anything like that. He is a lawyer and previously a state senatorial candidate in the last election cycle. And he's a Republican, which is really cool. Okay, so 713-526-5738. Do we have somebody on the line?
Brother John is on the line. We can bring him on in.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, Greg, we're going to take a call from Brother John. Okay, so Brother John, you're on the air with myself and T. Greg. How you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm good, thank you. So what would you like to talk about or say to Greg or mention?
Well, you were mentioning there at the end about the elections and, you know, how, you know, most Republicans, you know, the Trump wave and all that. And I know what you were getting at with your gerrymandering. And, what, you know, I tend to agree with you just to the fact that recently the Supreme Court ruled in North Carolina that the legislation that's trying to overturn all these government elections, which is unconstitutional, just like all these city laws and everything else that they've tried to enact, is unconstitutional.
That's true. Actually, Greg and I were discussing the other day that there's going to be another election in 2017.
Next year.
Yes. Yeah, with
exactly.
The newly redrawn districts.
But the remark that the Supreme Court judge made in that decision, he said, I'd never seen such an unvoted, illegal, unconstitutional legislature And then something about their brashness. You know, I can't get this Quaker band. It was about a week ago that I heard this.
Well, if he's never seen a gerrymander.
And that's why he said, and you are going to have election year from now, and you are going to get voted in. So I do believe they're going to have to redistrict.
They are going to have to redistrict. They're going to have an election in 2017.
Yeah.
And if this judge says he's never seen a gerrymander that bad, he probably hasn't looked at Texas.
Well, see, that's the thing, because Texas, we've already been prior to that. That's why when he made that decision, I thought, my God, somebody's worse than us.
Well, you know, they work in their own districts, and it's entirely possible that in his judicial district, this is the worst he's seen.
Right, exactly.
But if I could jump in, I'd also
Yeah, sure.
Carolina has been to the United States Supreme Court on redistricting cases
more than any other
state in the country.
I'm sorry.
We've got a long history of doing expert gerrymandering.
Say that. Start over, Greg, because I think we were talking over you. Hold on, Brother John.
Yeah.
Start over, Greg. I think we were talking over you.
Sorry, I was going to say North Carolina has been to the United States Supreme Court on gerrymandering cases more than any other state in the country. We got a long bipartisan history of doing it very expertly, if you will.
Well, at least it's bipartisan, right? At least you agree on something.
Yeah, he sounds rather proud of that fact, too, so that's why they can have
North Carolina's number one, man.
I listened to the rest off the air, but I just had to put that in because it was, you know, rather not too inclusive in the total picture there that was going on in the description of the election.
Well, I appreciate you calling, Brother John.
Happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, happy Festivus and St. Swithin's and everything else.
And happy holidays and perhaps Merry Christmas to you as well.
It begins right now. My wife is now pulling up from work. She'll be off till Monday, so that's great.
Cool.
Yeah, y'all take care and peach out, man, okay?
All right, you take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Okay, so I think what we're going to do is take a slightly early break because we're getting close to the half hour. You're listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I am Mike Koenig sitting in for Jeff Berg. So if you don't recognize me, my voice, or how I do my show, that's why. And I have my own show Monday nights at 9 p.m., Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig. And I have a website, thinkwingradio.com, where you can find all kinds of links and stuff. And you can follow me on Twitter at Think Wing Radio. So, Shannon, are you ready?
You better believe it, Mike.
Okay, let's hear the stuff.
All right. You got it. All right. Let's take a brief look at our forecast. It is currently 76 degrees and overcast skies. Still that 30% chance of rain showers this afternoon before 7 p.m. and patchy fog in the evening. That should last until about 10 a.m. tomorrow. And otherwise, this evening, mainly cloudy skies with a low around 67 degrees and cloudy tomorrow with a high of 77. And if we take a brief look at the roadways, there's quite a number of new accidents around town on the Southwest Freeway outbound at Sugar Lakes. There's an accident affecting the center lane to right shoulder, and that's backing up traffic over to around Kirkwood and Derry Ashford area. And on the North Sam Houston Tollway, westbound at North Sam Plaza, there's an accident affecting the center lane to right lane. And the Hardy Toll Road, an accident at Louetta is affecting the right lane there. And on the Gulf Freeway inbound at 518, a multiple vehicle accident is affecting the left lane and shoulder, backing up traffic to FM 646. But luckily, there's not all that many people out there on the roadway, so it's not backing up a heck of a lot like you would see during the week. Just a bit of slow going traffic on the West Loop, especially as it reaches the North Loop by the Katy Freeway that extends northbound over to Irvington. That's a look at your Houston area weather and traffic. I'm Shannon McCurchy, and you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1. Back to you, Mike.
Okay, I'm Mike Koenig sitting in for Jeff Berg at Partisan Gridlock. We have open lines. My guest is T. Greg Doucette, or Greg, as we like to call him. He's a lawyer from Durham, North Carolina, who ran for office in the last election cycle. And he's a Republican. So I thought it would be, or was formerly a Republican, and we can talk about that if he wants to. And we can talk about the political, socio-ethnic situation there, whatever questions or comments you have. 713-526-5738. And Michael. Is it Michael? Yes. Michael, you're up next. You're on the air. How you doing today?
Good. How are y'all doing?
Good, thank you. What's up?
Hey, so I got a couple questions for Greg. One is, well, I guess kind of what you just brought up. He was a Republican, I guess, switched parties maybe.
Is that something you're comfortable talking about, Greg?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it.
Go ahead.
Well, I just, I've felt that the party that I've been in my whole life has been trending in the wrong direction. You know, it's not really a small government party anymore. It's we want the party just as big as we want government just as big as everyone else, just directed to different people. So I'm now currently unaffiliated or independent, depending on your preferred usage of the term.
Now, in North Carolina, do they do closed primaries, and do you have to be registered as an independent?
No, we're an open primary state, so if you're unaffiliated, you actually get to pick which ballot you want when you go in.
Okay, so but you do have to tell them if you're this party, that party, or unaffiliated. To that extent,
correct,
you have to register. Okay.
Yes.
So did you hold office, correct?
No, I got beat. I decided to run in a relatively safe Democrat district, but I felt some points needed to be brought up for the benefit of the public.
Did you encounter dirty politics in your race?
No, my opponent was actually a pretty good guy.
That's a good question.
He kept it focused on the issues.
That's a great question.
And then lastly, I got tons of questions, but I'm not going to use up all y'all's time.
Okay.
What in your opinion, from your state, what is the perspective that Republicans are trying to use to justify the power grab? Are they trying to make sure that certain policies get enacted, or is it purely just we want to maintain as much power as possible for whatever reason possible?
I think it's the latter. I think it's they want to keep all of their power, and they've got the ability to do it because right now they have super majorities in both chambers of the legislature.
So that is kind of what I assumed. And so going from there, how do they go to the people and accurately justify that to them in order to get reelected? Because in my own view, there's no way that you can go to the people with how much news has been covered about this and say, yeah, we're totally justified in doing this. I feel like the repercussions from this is going to be drastic, and I feel like that they aren't even thinking 2 years in the road, let alone 10.
That's an interesting question. I'm betting that the answer is a little complicated, Greg.
Well, it's only sort of complicated. So the prior crawler about the gerrymandering is spot on. If you want to check a very gerrymandered district, look at the district I ran in. You know, I have two whole counties that border Virginia, but then if you look at the county of Durham, it looks like Massachusetts. You know, it's a very artfully gerrymandered hook to the point where I live in one district and I actually pay rent across the street, which is a completely different district. You know, because that gerrymandering has been so thorough, there's no real opposition to the incumbents, either Republican or Democrat. You know, more than two-thirds of the legislature was already chosen when candidate filing ended because no one bothered to run against any of the incumbents. So the part of how they justify the power grab is that they don't need to justify the power grab because none of them are going anywhere. Their only fear is a primary from someone who's even more extreme than they are.
If it wasn't such a scumbag thing to do...
Now, you got to watch your language on that.
Sorry. If it wasn't such a malintended policy to take, it's almost kind of brilliant.
I think, if I can just throw in something, because the gerrymandered districts have been declared unconstitutional,
right,
and because there will be an election in 2017 to fill out, I guess, the balance of the terms until the 2018 elections, it's entirely possible that some of these people that were engaged in this power grab in these newly redrawn districts, depending on how ungerrymandered they are, they may, in fact, have to answer for these votes.
Well, that's kind of the fear among the political class, is that they don't know how 2017 is going to turn out, not just because the districts are going to be redrawn, but because you usually have very, very low turnout during odd-year elections in North Carolina.
Everywhere.
Typically, the only things we elect are city council races.
Mm.
So if you have a lot of activist Democrats who show up, even in a strongly Republican district, you can defeat a Republican incumbent because there are so few total voters going to the polls.
Sadly,
right,
though, how often does that happen? Usually it's the other way around. Okay,
well,
Michael?
That's true, but this will be the first time we've had elections in an odd year, I think, in my lifetime.
Really? That's interesting. Okay.
So, just one last question,
yeah,
and I'll hang up and listen. So yeah, what is the probability that the gerrymandering will even itself out and it will become a somewhat neutral state? And if that is possible, how do they do that? And I'll hang up.
Oh, I don't think it's ever going to become
Thank
a
you,
neutral
Michael.
State anytime soon. I mean, as the computers and the GPS and, you know, GIS, all this stuff gets more powerful, you can fine-tune your districts ever more precisely. And I think as long as the legislature controls the power of the districts, you're going to continue seeing these very lopsided results until we get to the point where we decide to give the map drawing power to someone else.
Okay. Michael has already hung up, but I appreciate your answer, Greg. Okay, so we do have some open lines, and I do try to get everybody on who calls, and I think at this point in time that's still possible. So if you want to call, 713-526-5738. If you're patient, I'll get to you. Next one up is Dennis. Do me a favor, put the names in all caps because I have trouble seeing the lowercase.
Okie doke.
Thank you. Okay, Dennis, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment, and I'd like to hear your response on this. It's been proven worldwide in studies all over the world that all social problems are a result of income inequality. Talking about drug addiction, alcoholism, marital problems, street gang violence, or anything you can think of, any social problems are all rooted in income inequality. And capitalism is a system that concentrates wealth. I'd like to hear your comment on that.
Well,
thank you for taking my call.
Let me just ask for a clarification, because all is a very powerful word. Is that the word you want to stick with?
I suppose you might find an exception, but I think it's pretty much accurate.
Okay. Greg, do you want to...
Even heart disease has been related to income inequality.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, life expectancy and everything else. Greg, do you want to address any of that?
Well, I think part of it is on point. You know, we always say money can't buy happiness, but it sure can buy a lot. So I agree with the principle that generally folks that are wealthier have better lives, you know, all the way down to the criminal justice system where I work. You don't see a whole lot of wealthy people in the courthouse.
Yeah, there's an old saying that money doesn't buy happiness, but it makes misery much more tolerable.
Right. So on that, we're in agreement. Now, the question is, how do you get as many people able to have that type of resources, you know? And from there, I got to disagree. I think even though capitalism concentrates wealth, it also provides for social mobility more than anything else.
You also have
structural barriers in place, which is what you get the bigger your government is, the harder it is to move from one income stratus to another.
So now,
if you compare us to, say, Europe, you know, it's a good example. Their inequality is not as bad, but their social mobility is worse as well.
They've actually done studies that contradict that. That while that was at one time true, at this point in time, because the progressivity of the tax rates have dropped so much. I mean, in Eisenhower's time, if you made a high enough income, you were taxed at 90%. And now the top rate is like 37%. So progressivity has gone down. Taxes have gotten flatter. That restricts the kind of things government can do in terms of like infrastructure, social support, social safety net, health care. And those sorts of things create economic activity, which create income, which create economic and social opportunity. So, one of the things that I've often said is that overpaid executives who are making $200, $500 million a year, and I say this advisedly, is not a victimless crime. When somebody is making in the hundreds of millions of dollars a year, that money is either being taken out of the pockets of consumers, or it's being taken out of the pockets of workers, or it's being taken out of the research and development. So I think imbalance matters, and I don't have anything against wealth. I think I do have a problem with filthy wealth. So you have people that are billionaires who then set political, economic, or in the case of Gawker, reporting agendas, you know, essentially too much concentration of wealth. And then you have a state like New Jersey where a billionaire got old enough. He wanted to move to New Jersey, to Florida, rather. And New Jersey started to panic because the income tax they got from him was like 10% of the state budget. I mean, there is something wrong when you get to that point. In my opinion.
You need to understand that the capitalism is driven by scarcity and planetary destruction. These are major drivers.
I mean, capitalism is essentially greed and ambition. And I think that we need to regulate that because greed and ambition have their place, but they can't be unbridled. We need to sort of bridle it. But since Greg is the guest here, I really want to get his take on all of this stuff we've been throwing out. Greg, you want to kind of say where we're right or wrong, you disagree or you agree?
Well, I don't think
well,
it's
positive about how great advertising.
Hold on a second there, Kevin. Let Greg talk.
I don't think it's greed. I think it's prioritizing how you access resources. You know, there's a reason why you get iPhones made in the U.S. or conceived in the U.S. that you didn't have, you know, coming from Russia or from China or from North Vietnam, you know, or North Korea, rather. It's something where resources are finite and that's not going to change. People have to decide what they value. You know, it's why when you go to the store and you buy, say, a loaf of bread, you thank the cashier for selling it to you, and the cashier thanks you, too, for buying it because both of you were better off. You wanted the bread more than the money. The grocery store wanted the money more than the bread.
So I mean, I think I agree with you, Greg, that capitalism is a good. The question is, should it be an unbridled good? And when it's unbridled, does it remain good? Now, I'm going to throw out an idea to you. You know, they have something called social democrats. And we don't have an equivalent for capitalism. And I have actually wondered if we need to be talking about something called social capitalism, where capitalism is good, but it should come with social responsibility.
Well,
anybody?
Social responsibility is a whole separate ball of cheese. The concept of corporate social responsibility gets taught in, you know, colleges of management all over the country. It was part of my economic classes when I was an undergrad. I don't think there's any real dispute that there's a degree of regulation that is necessary and appropriate. The challenge comes in where those regulations are not protecting from capitalism's excess so much as enabling capitalism's excess. You know, I'll give you an example here in North Carolina. We have regulations in place that were designed to incentivize the use of clean energy. And what happened was solar companies, not just all renewables, but solar companies in particular, could get two-thirds of their construction costs paid for by taxpayers. A third of it got paid for by the state. A third of it got paid for by the federal government. So through this regulatory structure, you've got a system where they're only taking a third of the risk. The taxpayers are taking the other two-thirds, but they're keeping 100% of the profits. So at that point, it becomes a question, who is being served by the regulation? It's not the public. It's the people that happen to have access to the politicians to get the types of regulations they want.
It's corporate socialism.
Crony capitalism, we call it, but it's
okay.
The same thing, but yes.
Okay. Kevin, is there anything else you want to ask to wrap up, or are we done? Kevin? Ah, well, then let's hang up on him. Oh, Kevin's next. I'm sorry, Kevin. Okay, let me just throw something out before we get to Kevin. I'm sorry, I should have known that when I was looking at it. There are some schools that have lost federal funding in North Carolina, and I sort of ran across that in passing. Is that something you can talk about a little, Greg?
I can. So we have seven law schools in the state. It's pretty a pretty large amount for the size of North Carolina. One of them is a for-profit law school. It's called the Charlotte School of Law. It's not related to our university system. It is part of what's called the InfoLaw Consortium. They have three law schools, Charlotte, Arizona Summit, and then Florida Coastal. And essentially, the U.S. Department of Education decided this week that they could no longer have access to federal financial aid because so many of their graduates are defaulting on their loans. And then, of course, that means in practice that realistically the Charlotte School of Law is not going to be around too much longer unless there's an appeal that gets approved. And there's a concern that they have completely, pull the wool over the eyes of their students by not disclosing that this was a very real risk that was looming over their heads.
We're coming up to a break, but very, very quickly, what are your thoughts on for-profit universities or colleges?
I didn't have opinions before Charlotte School of Law. Now I think it's a disaster.
Okay. Well, we're on the same page, you see. Okay. We've got Kevin up next. Dean is on hold. We're going to have to move along a little quicker. Now, we do have open lines. If you call, I'm not going to promise you'll get on, but I'll try to get you on. 713-526-5738. You're listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM. I am Mike Koenig sitting in for Jeff Berg. And Shannon, take it away.
Thank you very much. Okay, it is currently 75 degrees and overcast skies, 30% chance of rain showers this evening until about 7 p.m. And they say there's a dense fog advisory in effect tonight and probably tomorrow night as well. Tonight, expect mainly cloudy skies with a low around 67 degrees, and cloudy Saturday with a high of 77. Expect tomorrow night about 40% chance of periods of showers after midnight and a low of 66. And that extends into Christmas morning. So be prepared for that. And let's take a brief look at our roadways on the North Sam Houston Tollway westbound at North Sam Plaza. There's an accident affecting the center and right lanes. The traffic is backed up to Ella. And on the Gulf Freeway inbound at 518, there's still that multiple vehicle accident affecting the left lane and shoulder. Traffic's backed up to FM 646. And a few other slow going areas, including on the North Freeway inbound from west up to Little York due to an earlier accident. And on the Katy Freeway inbound, it's slow going from Highway 6 over to Beltway 8 and due to a stalled vehicle in the left shoulder right by Kirkwood. Besides that, it's rather clear out there, so enjoy. That's a look at your Houston area weather and traffic. I'm Shanna McCurchy, and you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1. And Mike, take it away.
Thank you so much, Shannon. You ever hear the military acronym SNAFU?
No.
It kind of describes all Houston traffic pretty much
yes,
all the time. And what it stands for, and I'm going to clean it up a little bit, situation normal, all fouled up.
You know, some people have been wanting me to say the same thing. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just keep it specific.
Just tell them traffic is snafu'd.
But, yeah, it's usually quite a mess out there. So this is a little Christmas gift in and of itself.
I think Elliot's on the air somehow.
Well, he's taking a call, and I have my mic open.
Ah,
so same room, same.
Bleed over.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you're listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig sitting in for Jeff Berg. My guest is T. Greg Doucette. He is a former state senatorial candidate in North Carolina. He has a law practice in Durham, North Carolina. If you know someone or you yourself need legal services, you might consider contacting him. He has a website, durhamweedlawyer.com. D-U-R-H-A-M, weed like the weed, and lawyer.com, all one word. And I'll also plug his office number, 919-998-6993. I'm not sure how many people here need that number for legal services, but if you do, I think that that's the least I can do for Greg. Okay, next up is Kevin and then Dean, and we're going to have to start to move along a little quicker, so I'm going to try to give everybody like 2 or 3 minutes. Kevin, you're on the air. How you doing?
Good. Well, just 5 seconds, just say hi, and you can hang up on me now, Mike.
I don't need to hang up on you, man. What do you got?
Okay. Well, there's been redistricting for some time on both sides, I would think.
What Greg is saying is that this is sort of a common practice, regardless of which party is in power, so there aren't good guys or bad guys here.
Yeah. I can jump in, but if I only got a minute or two to speak, then I would say your feelings, Mike and Greg's on what we see with this privatization appointments and the form of austerity that will come even to the point of the Secretary of Education that's been appointed by Trump, that is going to be vouchers.
Okay,
and,
so you're now talking
charters.
About national policy, his opinion on national policy.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, he's appointing all these more or less privatization specialist corporate raiders.
Okay.
Your thoughts, then, if you want to go ahead and bump me up.
I'll go ahead and let you go and let Greg answer that. Thank you so much for calling.
Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Take care. Okay, Greg, what are your thoughts at the national level, what's going on with the kinds of appointments that President-elect Trump is making and some of the policy he's co-opting through Twitter?
It's going to be a long 4 years. That's about all I can offer.
Yeah, that sums it up.
I've paid attention to his appointees. I will say this. His choice for White House counsel was a good one. But the rest of them, you know, a lot of people with no government experience, no real policy experience, no understanding of how things actually work, it's going to be a very long 4 years.
Let me ask you a speculative question. Do you think that Trump will serve out his entire term, or do you think he will be, for some reason or other, removed or superseded?
He's not going to be removed. He might quit if he gets bored. But I think you've got so many politicians that are have a vested interest in staying in power, that they're not going to do anything to upset the apple cart.
Well, if they remove him, they have Pence, who's still very conservative, very extreme in a lot of things, but more rational in terms of, for example, international policy, which is going to be much harder to salvage in some ways than domestic policy.
But at the same time, they risk alienating everyone who voted for Trump. And a lot of them want those votes when it comes time for the midterm election.
Mm. Well, we'll see. People have awfully short memories, and 4 years is a long time, or 3.5 if it comes to that. Okay, let's get to Dean, and maybe we'll have a chance to get to Hayes. So, Dean, you are going to be momentarily on the air. I'm just waiting to see the line turn red. There you go, Dean. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight? We got. I can give you like 2-3 minutes, and then we'll see what we got.
Is it true the general manager is resigning?
I have heard that rumor. I'm getting head shaking. So there apparently is some truth to the KPFT general manager departing the station. I do not know the circumstances. I have not heard official word. There's just been sort of rumors. But then again, I do a 9 p.m. show, so who do I get to talk to? But that seems to be the buzz.
Curious. I heard him say he was retiring. And it'd be interesting to know what kind of retirement he got out of a radio station like this. He's constantly begging for money on the air, and nobody will say, you know, what his salary was, how much money he was making, and now he's retiring. It seems kind of fishy to me.
Well, all right, let me say some things, and again, just kind of what I sort of hear and extrapolate. If he wants to retire, he is an older gentleman. I think he's close around my age. He is entitled to Social Security. He may have a 401k from the station. From the scuttlebutt I get, he is paid a decent salary, but frankly very low for the kind of job he does. General managers for stations get paid a lot more than what I have heard he is paid here. But, I mean, he is a full-time guy. He is responsible. He's entitled to get some kind of decent pay. But, I mean, you know, retirement is retirement. You have the assets you have and whatever retirement plan you have. I can tell you if he has a – it's not going to be a golden parachute. If anything, it'll be something like a tin or lead parachute. So I don't think he's going to be draining the station of assets. No, I have a feeling, and I can't say this authoritatively, but I think your concerns are misplaced.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, obviously y'all's budget for a year is well over $1 million.
Yeah.
And if you just say, okay, he makes 8 or 10% of that, he's making at least six figures
for
that job.
Not what I've heard. No, he is not making six figures. That's why I say as a general manager, he's paid pretty low.
And the other thing is that, you know, he micromanages that station so much. I hope that this is going to open up the doors for other people to get in there and get on the microphone. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, I've said my piece. What I know is minimal. What I hear, you know, what I hear is what I hear. I don't think that you need to be concerned that he is going to take advantage of the station by getting some kind of big windfall when he retires. I don't think that that's an issue.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dean. And so we have time for Hayes. Hayes, you're on the air. How are you doing today?
I'm going to
say tonight.
How about yourself?
I'm okay, but I'm confused because I'm so accustomed to doing a 9 p.m. shift. It's like, how are you doing tonight?
I understand. Well, I'll be pretty brief about what my thoughts are, and I want to get you and your guest's opinion on it. We talk about how CEOs are overly compensated, but from what I understand, majority of their compensation comes through stock, not through their actual paycheck. So if I remember correctly, stocks came about during the Depression to help get companies off the ground, to build jobs and whatnot. And with most of the modern methods we have to make money and the way these companies all invest and reinvest in each other, wouldn't stocks be unnecessary during this common era that we're in? And that in itself would limit the financial authority that these companies have over us and elections. They would solely operate based on profit, which right now they're not. They're getting this goose egg of money that we don't get anything in return for but an overpriced product and, you know, less income on the job site. So what are you guys' opinion on that?
Greg, you want to take that?
I was going to say, I think that's a bit above my pay grade. from my standpoint doing business law, I have a lot of clients that are small businesses. You know, we're talking 10 employees or less. And for them, having the authority to issue stock, to give people that aren't in the business an ownership stake in it, helps them raise the capital they need to make things happen.
Which I get that for companies that are small business, meaning under 50,000 employees or under, not even that, under 5,000 employees, you know, that's a small business. But for these companies like your IBMs, your Apples, and all of these who have these CEOs, Coke Industries, for example, who make these god-awful amounts of money that are based solely on stock profits, it's not based on work. If we're talking about the ability to gerrymander, the ability to have politicians in their pockets, that money would go away if we were not all invested in stocks, which are a gamble. We're supposed to use those for retirement, but those things are not a retirement. They're not secure at all.
Well,
and
let me
a few billion dollars into them a day.
Let me break in here because we are going to be running out of time very shortly. The reason that so much CEO compensation is in stock or options to buy stock, it's all basically tax stuff, tax avoidance, tax deferral.
The wage theft.
I'm sorry?
Absolutely. It's wage theft. They take the money from us, and then they don't even promise anything in return.
I think the thing that's galling, well, there are two things that galling, is I think that there's a limit to how much any human being is worth in income per year. I mean, I don't know that a human being is worth $1 billion a year in income, which is what some of the highest paid financial guys make with bonuses and stuff. I think that it's a crime that when a company is losing money, when a CEO gets a bonus for losing less money. I mean, you know, that's just crazy. I do want to point out, because my wife is here in the station with me, and she wants to make sure that everybody understands that most of the people in this station are either volunteers or very low paid. So even the paid staff here ain't paid much. It's usually part-time work, and they have to make a living elsewhere. And even the paid people do it as much for love as for money. So, and that's true, I think, of Dwayne as the general manager. I think what he does at least as much for the love of the station and its mission as he does it for money. And I truly, truly believe that. Okay, Hayes, we're running out of time. Can I let you go?
Absolutely. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for calling. Okay, you've been listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM. I am Mike Honig. I have been sitting in for Jeff Berg. My guest has been T. Greg Doucette, criminal and business lawyer from Durham, North Carolina. You can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, get all his contact information. Follow me on Twitter at at thinkwingradio. And, oh, I have a great quote. Isn't it kind of funny that at the end of 2016, I have a great quote that I have to find. Yes. Okay, at the end of 2016, I lost it. All right, well, my notes suck. All right, listen to me Monday nights at 9 p.m., thinkwingradio.com. Very eclectic, very off the wall, and you can tell I am sometimes either underprepared or confused. Take care.
Would you like to help evaluate programs, vet new ones, assist with making public service announcements, and provide volunteer support to the management of KPFT? We're taking applications for listener positions on the newly forming Program Council. That's a group of staff, listeners, and listener station board members who'll be charged with working with, advising, and supporting the management of the station in putting on what goes out over the air. It's a 2-year commitment, and any listener member is welcome to apply. Send your application with a short description of yourself, your particular interest in working with the Program Council, and any past experience you have had that seems relevant, by email to the KPFT Listener Station Board. That's lsb@kpft.org. Put Program Council in the subject line. Applications are due by December 31st. Listener members will be selected from the pool of applicants by a joint decision of the General Manager and the Listener Station Board.
You're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. We're in the home stretch for this year, and KPFT is asking you to consider a year-end gift. Your support creates this essential outlet for the best independent music, arts, and news around. Your support creates the opportunity for all of us to stretch our minds and challenge our imaginations. This is the first official week of KPFT's Quiet Campaign. During this time, we'll ask for a year-end gift to support your station. No long pledge drives or pushy requests. We're just asking you to remember your donation allows us to explore the world and the people who live in it in ways we never could before. Please make a special year-end gift now or join our sustainers with simple ongoing monthly gifts on your credit card or from your bank account. Visit us online at kpft.org. Your support during this month will ensure a happy new year for